on BYUSN. Cougar Hoops back in action tonight as TCU hits the Marriott Center. What kind of game are we expecting between the Cougars and Horned Frogs? ESPN's Sean Farnham on the call for tonight's game. He joins us in studio to preview the matchup, plus how he sees BYU stacking up right now with the best in the Big 12.
BYU's Big Three of H.A. DeBonta, Richie Saunders, and Rob Wright have been incredible so far this season, but are they the best trio in any sport in BYU history? And how are we feeling about BYU football's quarterback room behind Bear Bachmeyer? Who returns and how many QBs does BYU potentially need to add from the portal?
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Wednesday, January 14th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who was following each and every BYU player so closely in the transfer portal, including the backup quarterbacks, Jerem Jordan.
Listen, Trayson Borgé posted, everyone's been waiting for this one, running it back one more time. Loyal to the Royal, this one y'all been waiting for. I love some good self-awareness. That's an elite Photoshop as well. I believe that's Faletau Satawala.
Where's Raider DeMooney?
Yeah. Raider DeMooney. Perhaps a combination. Who knows?
Nice biceps, Trayson.
Yep. To which LJ Martin responded with a gif of LeBron James looking back, seeing Kawhi Leonard come into an NBA Finals game and not be happy about it. And then Trayson's response to LJ was the famous dunk from Dwayne Wade and LeBron. So this duo that we didn't know we needed is back. So great stuff from Trayson.
Photoshop expertise, folks.
It's actually pretty, the one that Trayson did on LeBron's actually pretty good. Like the next seamless. It's maybe he took a class. Maybe he watched a YouTube video.
I appreciate it. I just appreciate the expression of LeBron James specifically when LJ Martin is saying, okay, all right. Yeah, come on in.
Which the BYU connection there is, that's Kawhi Leonard. And I need to look this up. I haven't yet. How many top 10 matchups where BYU's in the top 10? They're playing a top 10 team. Yeah. Certainly BYU out of the top 10 right now. Some BYU fans not happy about it. We've got three top 10 opponents scheduled to come in here this year. If BYU climbs back into the top 10, if it's only one and now we have three this year, that's crazy. Can't wait.
Opportunity knocks. All rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
I can't remember having more fun watching a team play. They're all three All-American level good. TCU wants to come into the Marriott Center and get a big win for them. So BYU better be ready to go. I can't imagine what it's like for a coach to have to game plan against that. It's so hard. At home in the Marriott Center, I expect this team to take care of business.
BYU trying to get to 4-0 in Big 12 play. Huge week. TCU at home tonight at Texas Tech on Saturday night. The 11th-ranked Cougars hosting the Horned Frogs in what we believe will be a packed house at the Marriott Center. Late start, 11 p.m. Eastern, 9 Mountain. By the way, BYU has won 11 straight regular season Big 12 games dating back to last season. That is an incredible mark. For tonight's game, BYU is a, get this, 12.5-point favorite, according to oddsmakers. KenPom says BYU by 14 with an 88% chance to win. This is a good TCU team. Jerem, what type of game are you expecting tonight?
It could get weird. I mean, TCU is interesting. So game one, Malik Diallo, their star center, tears his ACL. They lose to New Orleans.
Terrible.
Not the Pelicans. New Orleans. So then they rebound. They beat Florida, Wisconsin, almost beat Michigan. They should have beaten Kansas last week. At their best, they're really good. They could very well challenge BYU tonight. Net 43. They've got a good balanced starting lineup. Really like what they bring from Jaden Pierre and Michael Robinson off the bench, Xavier Edmonds. A lot of Utah connections, by the way, with like Utah prep and Wasatch guys. Obviously, Tanner Toulson, former Cougar, coming off the bench. Tanner Toulson put up 20 against Arizona, 17 in the second half in their game on Saturday. 24th in defensive efficiency, so that matchup against BYU's top 10 offense is fun. They allow a lot of assists. They're not the biggest team in the country.
Yeah.
But I'm excited about it. I think, BYU at home, I feel good about against literally everybody in the country. You name it. You say Arizona's coming in here on the 26th in only 12 days. I say I like BYU's chances against the Wildcats. So certainly expect a win. Double-digit stuff, like you mentioned, KenPom Vegas. So I'm expecting a BYU win, but in Big 12 play, I mean, we even said it last week with ASU and Utah, like, hey, you got to show up, and BYU had to. And so, like, TCU is better than those teams. And then Texas Tech, BYU then begins perhaps the toughest three-game stretch of the entire season. At Texas Tech, home Arizona on a Monday, that turnaround is crazy. And then at Kansas. So let's go. Buckle up.
TCU gets after it defensively. 24th ranked defense in adjusted defensive efficiency. They turn you over. But BYU can beat this with what Kevin Young wants to do, which is make the simple plays, move the ball. You'll hear Kevin Young, if you're close to the bench within shouting distance, yell, move it, at least 30 times
a
game.
I like to move it.
Move it.
That's Kevin Young.
Does not want the ball to get sticky. This is where BYU can get after it against TCU, is with the pace and the ball movement. Because, yes, BYU and other teams that like to share the ball have an advantage over TCU in that regard. TCU doesn't allow a ton of offensive rebounds. They do a pretty good job of limiting you to a single shot. So they're, I mean, BYU's going to have to show some aggression to match up, but they're on their home floor. BYU as a 14-point favorite, I'm like, whoa, okay. Again, this is a team that beat Florida and didn't beat Wisconsin as handily as BYU did back in December, but we're close with a good Michigan team.
Oh,
TCU
yeah.
is more than capable, more than capable of pulling an upset in the Marriott Center tonight.
And they're capable of blowing a 15-point lead to Kansas. Like, we've seen some crazy.
They've had a tough time closing out some of those big games as well. So they can score it.
They don't have, like, a super alpha. Like, David Punch is interesting.
No, they're pretty balanced.
Like a 14-7 guy. Brock Harding is unique in that he's like an 8-6, two steals guy. Tanner's good off the bench. We know Tanner Toulson's skills for sure. It was funny that Adam Stewart, kind of one of the bench guys, his parents live right by Kevin Young. So Kevin mentioned that this week. Yeah, I'm expecting BYU to win. But this is one of those sneaky games. I mean, this has trap written on it given the next three games, Spence. But I think because BYU plays in the Big 12, this isn't the WCC mindset. It's just not where you go. Gonzaga's next week. Let's cruise through Pacific and Pepperdine here. And then BYU would stumble. They don't really stumble too much in these moments. Although, last year BYU lost to TCU. Only two players from TCU were in that game that are kind of back and significant. And then the time before that, TCU was up 17 at half. BYU went plus 29 in the second half, 58-29 to beat the Horned Frogs. That was a crazy game 2 years ago. So different teams, different versions of teams.
Yeah.
But I do expect a, you know, double-digit win from BYU.
I like the balance. I like the tenacity of TCU on defense. I think they're pretty good at protecting the rim. They got a nice block percentage, one of the top 10 teams in the country in that regard. So they do a good job protecting the rim and turning teams over and taking those turnovers and making it weird and getting out in transition. But can BYU move it consistently against a team that's giving up assists on 60% of made field goals? Like that's a big number. Yeah.
And the three best players in the game are BYU's big three, which brings me to this. It's been well documented how BYU's big three of A.J. DeBonce, Richie Saunders, Rob Wright III have played so far this year. BYU has a lot of great trios over the years in a number of sports. So riddle me this. Is the big three, the triple combination, the break three, if you will, of DeBonce, Saunders, Rob Wright III, the best trio in any sport in BYU history? That screams a Wednesday question.
It feels like it's a little bit early to bring in AJ, Richie, and Rob right now, but we're doing it just because we can. Why not? They're off.
Who's telling us we can?
They're off to an historic start, and they have been remarkable, to say the least. But legacy is everything when you look back on the big threes, because we know everything they already did at BYU. We don't know what AJ, Richie, and Rob can and will do together.
Well, what if BYU goes to the Final Four? What if A.J. DeBonce then is a top three pick?
Then they're probably the best big three ever, because they have now taken BYU to a place that they have never been.
What about the Elite Eight? Because BYU hasn't in 45 years.
Then you look at the metrics and consider that BYU in the modern era is getting back to the Elite Eight with the expanded tournament. Then they probably would still be the greatest big three ever.
I think they are. And A.J. puts you over the top. AJ has a chance to be the first or second best athlete from BYU professionally ever. Steve Young is that right now, because two-time MVP, Pro Football Hall of Famer. If AJ is like a seven-time All-Star and he's a Hall of Famer, this is the best trio, is it not? Like AJ, and even without that, like AJ has a chance to be the best BYU athlete that's ever come out of here. He might pass Steve Young. Who knows what AJ is in the NBA? Maybe he's an NBA MVP. Like, he has that chance.
Two-time NBA MVP.
He has that chance. He's good enough. When have we said that about somebody? Like, we love Jimmer, National Player of the Year. Like, Jimmer's all-time great from BYU. AJ has a chance to be all-time great at BYU and in the NBA. Like, and then Richie's going to play in the NBA. Rob Wright's probably going to play in the NBA, too. I think this is going to be the best trio ever. Right now, yeah, it's inconclusive right now.
It's too early.
So what's your best trio ever right now if these guys still have to kind of show us something?
In basketball, as great as Jimmer was spectacular. I feel like 80-81 with Ainge, Trumbo, and Roberts, because that team got to the only Elite Eight that BYU has ever been in. And Danny Ainge was the National Player of the Year and your scoring leader forever without a three-point line, and what he did with his NBA career. I mean, Ainge and Roberts, you know, they had lengthy NBA careers. So I'd probably lean toward that in basketball. But then you go open it up to all sports, and it's like, gosh, there have been some incredible trios. In football, you rewind only 5 or 6 years to 2021. Jaren Hall, Puka Nacua, and Tyler Allgeier.
That was pretty good. I mean, Puka, really, like, you have to have a star. And Puka is a star, man.
And how about the numbers that Max Hall, Austin Colley, and Dennis Pitta put up in 2008? Or in 2009, Harvey Unga with Dennis Pitta and Max Hall.
Yeah, 08's your year, though, because Max went for almost 4K passing. And then all three of those other guys, Colley, Pitta, all went 1,000 plus. Austin had 1,500.
That was amazing.
Austin was so good, he had to leave. I mean, I don't know that we'll ever have that year again. We have three skill players with 1,000 plus yards.
Well, one's a...
It's amazing.
Fourth round NFL draft picks.
Like, can you imagine if Chase Roberts and Carson Ryan had 1,000 yards plus what LJ did? And Bear goes for almost 4K? That's what 08 was. It was special. Yeah. And I think of the 99 men's volleyball team with the original LeBron. Hector LeBron was the setter for BYU. BYU gets 30-1. They win the Natty with Hector LeBron at setter. Ossie Antonetti and his cool fro and his lefty 48-inch vertical or whatever on the as oppo. And then Ryan Millar is the GOAT from BYU. He's the starting middle blocker on the 08 gold medal team for the United States in the Olympics. And they lose one match all year and win BYU's first national championship. That is a great trio. How about 01 or 21 soccer? Michaela Coulihan and Cam Tucker and Brecken Mozingo. They go all the way to the national championship game. That was a special group, too.
Yes.
That trio was incredible. I mean, and there are a million of them. There's a million of them that you could talk. You go, well, didn't BYU win a national championship? What was the trio that year? I would say Lake Haimuli and Robbie Bosco and probably Glenn Kozlowski or David Mills. You throw three of those four in there. That's pretty good, too. 83. Gordon Hudson, Lake still there.
Steve Young.
I mean, they've been so great. We can go on and on. Ty Detmer, Matt Bellini, Chris Smith. Like, you could go on forever. There have been some great trios. And frankly, what we're seeing from AJ, Richie, and Rob could be the best trio BYU's ever had. Mostly because all three, but AJ puts it over the top.
How about a shout out to Connor Mance, Clayton Young, and Casey Klinger and Cross Country? Yep. Like, that team is ridiculous.
There's some great ones.
Talking about two top 10 Olympic marathon runners in Connor Mance and Clayton, and multiple national championships.
And then just pick three of the four DMR back-to-back natties. Just pick the trio if you want from those two.
That men's trio for me in the running world recently, like that the run they've had in national championships and in notable marathons and in the Olympic marathon is crazy. Like, that is next level.
This is a running school, as we've talked about.
Our question of the day. Is the big three of AJ DeBonta, Richie Saunders, and Rob Wright III BYU's best big three ever in any sport? Still a lot to do.
We like being prisoners of the moment.
At Twiggy or Stone says they could be, but the season is not done yet.
Yeah.
First one that came to mind for me were Hall, Colley, and Pitta. I'm sure there are probably others that I am not thinking of.
There's a lot. Yeah, that's a great one, like we mentioned. At Rowdy and the Rock. Well, obviously.
Oh, they say yes. to A.J. Robin Ritchie.
because he's in The Rock and is enjoying right now. Yeah, well, obviously.
Love this response from at Gen X BYU fan. Sean Farnham might say the maple, chocolate, and blueberry cougar tails.
John's going to be here in a few minutes. We'll ask him. Yeah, I love that.
Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Any sport, what's your best big three ever?
It's a fun question. I mean, I like this stuff. Normally, we reserve that for like May. We're in the middle of the season. Let's talk about it. Are they going to be? Let's have some fun. As previously mentioned, quarterback Trayson Borgay announced he's coming back. I know you guys have all been on pins and needles for that. How do you feel about BYU's quarterback room behind Bear Bachmeyer? Because we know that McKay Hillstead's going back to Utah State. Emerson Gallman's on a mission.
I know we're having some fun with Trayson, but I think that he is a very capable backup quarterback. He's been around.
I love that he's back.
Forever.
Yes.
Like, if he had to come in a game, I would not be thinking, oh, no, there's no way that BYU can win this game.
Yes, he's one of the most experienced backups in the country.
He knows the system in and out. And I know his coaches thought that he would be more competitive last fall in potentially earning the spot. He was beat out by a freshman All-American, Bear Bachmeyer.
And he was beat out by another freshman, too, Emerson Gallman.
Bear is a special athlete. Emerson goes on his mission.
Yeah.
I believe in Trayson Borgay. I think he is a more than capable backup quarterback for BYU. You always want more depth and more playmakers in that room, but right now, QB1, QB2, fine with it. BYU can go to work and try and find some others, but it's really just 1 year because then Ryder Lyons is back after this year.
He's saying he'll be here next January, so there you go.
Is it enough for BYU this year with Bear Bachmeyer, Trayson Borgay, and then whatever else happens in that room?
There's Cole Hagan back, and there's Enoch Watson off a mission. So they only really need one because, and there was a Michigan quarterback in the portal that visited recently. Like, you need a capable backup to Bear Bachmeyer just in case. But my question there is, what kind of quality are you going to get out of the portal because you know you're not the starter? So that it's a certain kind of guy that is willing to come in knowing the best he could be is number two to start.
The best case scenario for a situation like this is to get a guy who is a true freshman and is probably going to redshirt and then is just here to learn the system for a year or two and then behind Bear Bachmeyer and be the guy. BYU kind of has that with Ryder Lyons. He's going on a mission.
For this year, yeah.
Yeah. What I'm saying
is, Gary Bohannon?
I'm painting the ideal scenario in my mind, which in our day and age now, because everyone wants to play now. Like, I'm good enough to play now. I want to play now. There are certain times where it's like, okay, I'm coming out of high school. I can be patient for a year, maybe two, and then be the guy at BYU, including a redshirt year. So that when you take over, you've got at least 3 years of eligibility remaining.
And who's coming in here going, yeah, I'm willing to be a backup the entire time? Because the anticipation is that it's Bear Bachmeyer and then it's Ryder Lyons.
Yes.
So, and frankly, BYU loves Emerson Gallman. Really liked him. Like, he was the surprise.
Emerson throws a fantastic football.
If BYU had a week to prepare, like not mid-game, that would have been McKay. It probably would have been Emerson who would have come in.
He was in the mix.
If something had happened to Bear. So, you really need one. So, it's Bear Bachmeyer. It's Trayson Borgay. It's Cole Hagan. It's Enoch Watson off a mission who played for tight end Max Hall, by the way. And then it's TBD, assuming they carry five. They carried five this year. If they carry five, they need one more.
And I'm not saying that BYU can't go out and find a late addition in the portal or maybe a JUCO guy. Like, there's always that opportunity. Like, there are enough players in the portal and enough quarterbacks in the portal that if the dominoes fall a certain way, you could still pull in somebody else.
But it's a certain kind of guy who knows he's not competing for a starting spot.
Yeah.
That's a little different.
All right, FBS coaches, speaking of football, this is wild, and redshirting. Unanimously voted to change the redshirt rule from 4 games to 9 games yesterday, as reported by The Athletic's David Ubben. Okay.
And just to clarify, it's a recommendation that will be put forth. It's not done.
Voted unanimously to push this recommendation forward.
Right.
After Ubben puts that out, the college football world kind of went crazy. Like, I'm sorry, what? Not 9 games? Like, that's like it's essentially another full season. It's like 5 years to play five. It's crazy.
That is an idea out there, right? The five to play five.
What do you make of all of this?
Nine's a lot. And listen, It has everything to do with the 5 years to play five and no more red shirt. Just you are what you are. Your clock stops and starts, obviously, with like missions and whatnot, military service, so on and so forth. But it's people are retroactively afraid to get sued regarding NIL compensation, eligibility, and so on.
What
and so
makes
forth.
You think that, Jerem, so, in this day and age and social climate?
Nine games is really funny because what if you played nine and then you play in like a Big 12 title game and college football playoff?
You played a full year.
You can play 12 or 13
You played
games.
A full year. Congratulations, you are on the path to 5-5.
You just rest up in the FCS game and two other games. Like, the strategy around being a GM now, and if it goes this direction, is wild, man. Nine games. I have a real issue. I have no issue with the four-game thing. I love the four-game thing. I think four is fine. I have an issue that in no other sport in the NCAA do we have anything remotely close to this. We need to be doing this in volleyball, soccer, basketball, everything. We need the you can still play a little bit and redshirt.
Yeah, in men's basketball, can you play 20, like 75%? Can you play 24 games still redshirt?
Well, realistically, I would love like you can play 10 games, period.
So you're not even asking for the equivalent percentage.
Well, from four of like 12.
Yeah. But if it gets to nine, why
I think nine's too much. No.
Do you think it's going to pass?
I don't know.
I think there's a significant movement that it might pass.
Just tell me what the rules are, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. You don't want to discuss that hypothetical?
Who exactly is BYU recruiting? Just tell me when they show up, and then we'll talk about their impact.
The whole premise of our opening topic was based on a hypothetical, though, because we don't know what A.J., Rob, and Richie are going to do.
I care a little more about BYU's trio than I do how many games a redshirt will count for.
Okay. Well, if it impacts BYU, all right, conversation.
Number 11, men's basketball, takes on TCU tonight. Get a nap for this one, okay? 10 Eastern time for the pregames on BYU TV and BYU Radio. Spencer will have the latest and greatest courtside. Sean Farnham on the call, by the way, on ESPN2, BYU Radio. And postgame immediately after on BYU TV and BYU Radio. Spencer will have all the compelling and rich interviews.
You don't have to wait for Sean Farnham in the game. He's going to join us in about 3 minutes in studio.
Yeah.
Is he more excited about tonight's matchup or his next opportunity to hammer a cougar tail? Get it, Sean. This is BYU Sports Nation.
Dangerous than you think, by the way.
Right to the outside. Slams down the follow. Right. Finds Saunders, elevates, hits a three. Impressive win for BYU in a rivalry game.
Live at Studio B, this is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. And just across the way is the great Sean Farnham back in Studio B.
I didn't get the light blue memo.
Well, you weren't here last week on the show. You stood me up. You left. You didn't want to be around me.
It's good that you understand.
It's the synergy that we have here. I mean, I did go with something that actually fits me, though. I mean, he went to the same shopping mark of T.J. Altzelberger.
Nice.
So, I mean, it's
well done.
Just the difference between the two of
similar,
us.
Similar haircut, too. Just
I went to Collars & Co., and he went to Nike off the rack. It's good.
Well, now that we've got that shot out of the way.
It's okay. This is the first one that was coming.
Okay, I saw yesterday that you had swig for the first time.
Oh, yes, I did.
Tell us.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, my daughter's been on me the last couple times I've come to town. She's
Cal
like,
goalie yes. Morgan.
She goes, have you gone to swig? I said, I haven't gone to swig. She goes, you need to go to swig. And she's like, you need to go to swig. So, like, I had just gone and had lunch. I came. My flight was a little delayed. There's a little kerfuffle in the back of the plane as we landed in Salt Lake, and that caused us a little bit of a delay getting off the plane.
Okay.
But as I drove to town, I got my sandwich, and I was eating, and then I was driving. I was like, you know what?
I'm doing it.
I've never gone to Swig. So I went to Swig. I ordered the Hula Girl. That was what they offered me. They said that was a very popular one. I did a review on my Instagram. You can go to my Instagram and see the review. You saw it.
Yeah.
I reposted.
Commented.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Gotcha.
But it was very good. It's very different. Mm. I get the idea of the whole dirty soda thing now. And it was different. Like, it was definitely a different taste, but I really enjoyed it. That kind of started off my day. I met Austin and Morgan, who are avid watchers of your guys' program.
Fantastic.
They were there. They asked me if it was better than a cougar tail, in which I laughed and scoffed and said, of course not. but it was good. Yesterday was an all-time great day here.
That's great.
So Dave Fleming took me up to Sundance Resort last night.
Very nice.
And we had dinner up there in the what is called the Owl Bar.
Yes.
And it's like where Butch Cassidy, at one time sat at the bar. And
so that, cool, right?
Super cool. And there's these great musical acts last night. So that was very nice. Really good dinner up there. We came back, and he told me about the creamery. How come you guys never told me about this creamery?
Sean, we thought you knew.
There's an expanded creamery now. It's brand new.
I know. I just went. And I never gone to the old one.
This morning?
No, last night.
Okay.
So I went last night. And unbelievable. I had this chocolate with marshmallow and caramel and everything. And it was so good. The place was popping, by the way. I mean, packed.
Generally is.
There was a guy that was like pointing to the Y on his hat, like looking at me as I was getting the ice cream. And I was like, all right, that's cool. And he walked up to me and he said, you're the guy that's on BYU TV, aren't you? But he did so in a weird way. I'm going to stand
like
up. So we need to take a wide shot here. So stand up for me, Jerm. So
demonstration.
Okay. Now I'm at the same height.
Okay.
First perspective.
So he's there, and he turns around, and he goes, you are the guy that's on BYU TV with his finger that close to my face. And I'm like, dude, you clearly didn't watch the Safety Zone video.
Situational awareness, folks.
I mean.
Have some situational awareness.
I heard that that's the video everybody watches, and that it's led by some amazingly talented people.
I thought Vivian did a great job, and our other host. Yeah, she was great.
Those interactions are always fun.
But it was good. It was good. It was a great day. It was a
really
great day.
I thought you had a great day yesterday, Sean.
Thank you. I went like this. I'm like, can I get an elbow with you? Like, we're not shaking hands,
bro. I need some space here. Like, what's going on?
I got ice cream. Your finger's in my face. It's a little too much.
Hey, dinner at Sundance.
It was good.
Swig. And creamery ice cream.
It was an unbelievably good day.
I don't think today can top that. I mean, we could have a great game, but who knows?
I think it can. Because, A, I'm getting a cougar tail today. I was lied to last week. They said they were going to bring one to Salt Lake.
And they didn't.
They did not.
Name names. Who lied?
Tyson.
But he always gets thrown under.
Tyson Jacks. But it's okay. Tyson helped me with some other things that were way more important that day. And we got a lot of fun things tonight. It's going to be really good. It was great to see the team in person in that game, in that environment. And then to be able to come back here and do the game tonight, even though it's a late start, it'll be really good.
Okay. We're going to talk, obviously, about BYU-TCU in a moment. But just a question to recap your experience in Salt Lake City. For those that were not in the Huntsman Center, how would you explain that dynamic of the mix of BYU and Utah fans and the shenanigans during timeouts and halftime and BYU fans going after Morgan Scalley was on the court? What was that like to witness?
It was fun, man. It was fun. I mean, it's what college basketball should be in a true rivalry game like that. You know, obviously, there was a lot of blue there. I would say it was probably like 35-40%, probably, which I think is a pretty good. I mean, because the student section takes up a lot of it, right? But you could see even in the video, you see a lot of blue sprinkled around. It was really interesting when the football coach came out and was like, you know, this place is sold out, and this is how it should be every night. And then the BYU chant started, and I was like, yeah, somebody should have told him the reason why this was sold out, that all the games haven't been like this this year. But it was a great rivalry. Look, I thought Alex Jensen's team did a really good job. I mean, I think on paper, if you looked at that game, you would say this was going to be, even on the road, that this was going to be a blowout for BYU.
Their guards were great.
And their guards were able to consistently beat BYU off the bounce and apply pressure upon the back line and be able to finish. And that made it a very competitive game. They had obviously a clear strategy to try to limit the number of looks that AJ could get, rushing the double team every single time he caught the ball. But when you rush that double team at AJ, then that leads people open in rotations. And you have to kind of shift and rotate over. And I think where that showed up more as far as a flaw with them defensively was with the 6 offensive rebounds by Richie. Because when you double team, guys are rotating over, and now you're not necessarily in the same spacing. You're not in the same spatial awareness. And Richie's hustle and effort was able to get on the glass. And I said towards the end of that game, I said that if they win this game, that Richie Saunders is the MVP based on his offensive rebounding. And he was. It was really fun, though, to watch them compete. One of the other fun things that they did, the whole thing where they shoot the balls out of the cannon up to the top of the arena and stuff. Well, they shot it up to the top of the arena where the upper bowl was basically all BYU, right? So, like, this ball goes up there, and I turn and watch, and there's, like, these fans yelling at this kid, throw it back, throw it back. And so, like, this
like
young
– like, it's a home run ball.
Yeah, like, a young kid, like, he's at Wrigley Field. It's like,
yeah, he's got a Utah logo on. I don't want this.
Chucks the ball back towards the court. It was awesome. I was like, yeah, this is fun. It was really loud. It was really good, and I expect tonight to be packed and ready to rock as well.
Yeah, it should be great. And TCU is super interesting. So many Utah connections with Tanner Toulson and Wasatch guys and so on and so forth. But TCU, at their best, has shown to be really good. Should have beaten Kansas, you know, beat Florida, almost beat Michigan. Yet they lost in New Orleans early when Malik got hurt.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Arizona really took it to them at home on Saturday. What do you make of TCU? Because they could compete very well tonight.
They could compete, and I don't think they're going to be intimidated by the environment based on how they showed at Kansas. You know, they have smaller guards, and I think that's problematic in this game. They have smaller guards. But defensively, Jamie Dixon's done a really good job of playing positional defense. They're not a great shot-blocking team, but they force you to take contested shots, and their two-point field goal percentage defense is pretty good. And that usually means that they're doing a good job of staying between you and the basket. I think one of the things that's going to be interesting today later on when I go to shoot around is how are they planning on defending AJ? Are they going to go the full Utah sellout, and we're just going to try to limit him and get the ball out of his hands, and can we create turnovers? Because if there's one area that you'd look at AJ and say, okay, well, that could get cleaned up more, it's those turnovers. So can you force him into turnovers? How do you get him to bait him into turnovers where you potentially get those live ball steals and be able to run out to the other end of the floor? So I think it's going to be interesting to see how they approach that because that's the starting point for every team that's going to play you. And so every team's going to figure out, okay, how do we defend AJ? Then that's going to obviously go out to the next two. And Rob and Richie, and they're going to try to figure out, okay, so if we defend AJ this way, how do we rotate to make sure we're not giving Richie wide open three-point shots, even though he's been struggling a little bit as of late from beyond the arc? How do you take that away? How do you look at trying to make sure that Rob Wright doesn't get downhill, in particular to his right hand? As Bill Walton would say, he's right-handed. He's going to remain right-handed for the rest of this game. But seemingly, somehow, defensive teams are still not aware of that. And when they allow him to get to his right and he sees that seam, he's as good as any guard in the country getting downhill. So I think that's where it starts. And then once you get to that, you're like, okay, now how do we deal with Keba Keita? So that's what makes this team so dangerous and why they were a top-10 team.
Yeah, what? Okay.
You only fans have been really upset about that.
I know it's so early. I mean, there's still so much basketball left to play.
Guys, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't really matter. But I think that it's because of what happened at the end of the college football season where it's, well, in the modern era of college football, BYU is the only one-loss Power 4 team, not in the top 10. And,
it doesn't matter.
BYU is the only one-loss team in a Power 4 conference, not in the top 10 in basketball as well. What's going on? How do you read into that?
What I read into it is there's probably a lot of people that didn't watch the Utah-BYU game and that there's a lot of people that don't understand the rivalry aspect of that game.
Saw a close
final score and went, well, Vanderbilt's undefeated and they beat Alabama and then they beat LSU. So those are better wins than ASU and Utah, and especially considering BYU played obviously poorly against Utah. Because they didn't watch the game, and then they ranked. I think it's fine. It doesn't bother me. I think it's something that Kevin will probably talk to his team about and use it as extra, like, they're disrespecting us kind of thing. But I would say this. You win two games this week, you're going to be back in the top 10 next week. I mean, you go and win this game at home and then go to Texas Tech and beat Texas Tech.
Oh, man.
Like, you're clearly in the top 10. And at the end of the day, you just keep going down your schedule and saying, okay, if we win that game, if we execute here and we do this, and you continue to build on that consistency at the end of the season, it's not going to matter. I mean, this isn't the college football playoffs. There's 68 teams that get into the NCAA tournament. You're clearly going to be one of the top teams in the NCAA tournament, and you'll have a chance, if things continue to move that way, to have a really good path to advance deep in this NCAA tournament. And then obviously health is very important within that. But I think the chemistry of this group continues to get better and better. But I would not overly react to falling two spots in the poll this week. I will say when I opened it up, because I was doing my game board and I waited for the top 25 to come out, because Sunday I updated everything based on the Utah game. And it pops up on Monday and I went, what? How is that possible? They won two Big 12 games and dropped two spots? Like, what are we doing here? And then I looked and I was like, okay, well, Vandy, you know, they beat Alabama. Okay, the both games were at home.
Nebraska's playing great.
Nebraska's undefeated still. Okay, sure, fine. Doesn't matter.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
It's all good.
Sean Farnham is with us on BYU Sports Nation, getting set to call BYU and TCU. Let's talk about the Big 12 from a 30,000-foot view, if you will, and look at teams like Arizona, Houston, and Iowa State. And I know we ask you this on a week-to-week basis, but obviously BYU wants to keep pace with those teams. How do you feel like BYU is doing in that realm of keeping pace with the top of the conference?
They're right there. I mean, they're right there with the top of the conference. The top of this conference has been great all season long. I think entering last night it was 62-2. before
Kansas.
Now it's
Kansas,
and three.
Yeah, Kansas jumped Iowa State last night. You know, Iowa State does struggle to score the basketball sometimes, and they get stuck. And if you don't turn it over against Iowa State, you're going to have a lot of success. When they turn you over and they're able to score in transition, and Lipsy is one of the elite guards in the conference. I think Joshua Jefferson is one of only two players in all of Division I to average over 17 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists per game. They have a lot of weapons. But when they struggle to score the basketball and they're not making shots from the outside and they don't create those turnovers, they're susceptible to being beat. And I think that, you know, Arizona is an interesting case study as we go through this year, is because they're so much about scoring in the paint and the free throw line. They really don't take a lot of threes. Their efficiency is actually pretty good from the three-point line, and they have guys that can make it. Del Orso, obviously, coming off the bench has been huge in that. Burries has been a little bit better with his consistency from three. I think that's really important. But those are really the only two guys that shoot. So it allows you to kind of use your defense to kind of shrink the floor and try to take away driving lanes. But even with that being said, the size of them and Koa Pete and obviously Krivas has been unbelievable. And then you bring a guy like Tobias Waka off the bench who started 34 games last year. And
he's coming off the bench.
It's like a double-double guy.
Yeah, he's averaging 10 rebounds a game off the bench. There's not many guys in the country that come off the bench and average 10 rebounds. So they're a very elite team. But again, they don't shoot the three well. So if you're hot and you can make threes and you're trading threes for twos, it's going to benefit you at the end of the game. I think Houston is the one team that we continue to not talk enough about. And it's funny. You know, here's a team that played for the national championship, has 9 guys that dressed for the national championship game on their roster. Uzan is back. You know, Sharp is back. Jojo Tuggler's back. And no one's talking about
that. It's weird. It's almost like the college basketball world is bored with them.
And then, oh, by the way, you add Kingston Flemings, who's one of the most efficient freshman players in the country. And again, we're not talking about him.
Ask West Virginia if Houston's good.
You know, so, I think that's really interesting. I get to see Houston on Sunday this week. The ASU's playing at Houston. I'll do that game on Sunday. So I'm really excited to see them in person. But Houston is still Houston, to quote Kellen Sampson as he walked off the floor after the semifinal of the Big 12, looking at me screaming, Houston is still Houston. And Houston is still Houston now. And I think that with that being said, so in the conceptual of what you're asking me, BYU is very much so in that mix. I think that if you look at the Iowa State game here, that's a game that you would feel that BYU should win, right? BYU goes down to Texas Tech. They got two guys on that team that can really go. If one of those two dudes have an off day in Christian Anderson or JT Toppin,
winnable game.
It becomes a very winnable game for you. You know, when you look at Arizona, going down to Arizona, you think Arizona remembers last year's game? I think they do.
Arizona's here in 12 days. So, on Big Monday.
Right. So that is a game that you would think, here, probably can get a win. There, I would say you probably get a loss if you're objectively looking
at it. I'd take that right now. They're the number one team in the country.
Right. They are the number one team in the country. But I think that the gap is small. I don't think the gap is large between these four teams. And I think that's what makes this conference so unique and so good this year, and why everybody's so excited about what Big 12 basketball has.
If BYU climbs back in the top 10, BYU could have 3 top 10 matchups in the Marriott Center. I mean, this is ridiculous. Let's ask you this. We're at about a little past the midway point of the college basketball season. In the Big 12, who's your starting five? Who have been the 5 best players so far?
Well, okay, so I'm an experienced guard guy, right? So I go with Lipsy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think his toughness at the defensive end of the floor, he's such an extension of the coaching staff that you have him there. I think Christian Anderson has proven to be a first-round pick in the NBA draft this year, based on his performance with having the ball more in his hands. Darren Peterson, I put in there, but I put an asterisk when healthy. When he's out on the floor, his efficiency and how he can score, there's not many people that can get his shot off better and more efficient and score at the rate that he does. Obviously, AJ deserves to be on there. And then it's tough to ignore JT Toppin. I mean, again, we don't talk about Texas Tech a whole lot because of the top 4 teams in this conference, but JT Toppin is the reigning Big 12 Player of the Year. And those numbers are absolutely silly. And everybody knows he wants to get to his left hand. It's kind of like the Rob Wright of post players, yeah. Right? Everybody knows he wants to get to his left hand, and yet they can't stop him.
Does it?
And he just continues to get there, and it's great offensive scheming by Grant McCaslin to continue to put him in that situation. The ironic thing is there's not one player off the number one team in the country that was on that list. And I struggled with that a little bit.
They have balance.
Yeah. They do. They have balance. It's not necessarily the star power. I thought Jaden Bradley was probably the one guy I would consider to put on that list because it's kind of like the same thing of Lipsy, the experience of what he brings to the court and his understanding of the system. I like older guards that understand how to play.
Yeah, a second team in the Big 12 would also be an eyebrow raiser, right?
It's unbelievable.
That's how good the conference is.
The conference is so deep. I mean, like, P.J. Haggerty wasn't even a thought process.
Right?
And like, the guy's, like, dropping 23 a game. Like, you're like, I probably should look at that.
Well, you're good, but you're not that good. Like, that's crazy.
There's 16 teams. It's hard to make the list.
Okay, I want to finish with the question about our good friend Yegor Dielman doing his thing in Brooklyn. You watched him closely at BYU last year, and you felt like he was going to make a good transition into the NBA. His three-point shooting has taken everyone by surprise, except for maybe him. He told us he's like, I'll be a good three-point shooter. You watch. Now he's doing it. What do you think about Yegor Dielman in his rookie season?
I think it's been great, and I think it continues to prove that what KY has brought here and the development aspect of the players, it's not just about winning games, but it's about preparing them for their next step of their journey. And I think that's the blend you want when you're looking to hire a head coach that can make a difference and be able to recruit at a high level. And, you know, he started shooting the three-point shot better as the season went on.
Late in the season, yeah.
And if there's one thing the NBA does a really good job of, it's helping fixed shots and confidence within your shot. His ability to read screens, his passing, all of those things doesn't surprise me. And he's on a team that, quite frankly, stinks. So, like, he's going to have more opportunity than a lot of other rookies to be able to do what he needs to do and trial by error and make mistakes. But I think that he's played very well. And I think, again, it's one of those things that this program is going to continue to look at.
Are you going back to Swig before the game tonight?
I may go back to Swig. But, all right, you guys always have the question of the day. So I want to make sure that we get this in. Okay?
Let's go.
Tonight, the emphasis of our game on ESPN, too, will be mainly centered around the Big Three. All right? And we keep calling them the Big Three.
Yes. Yeah.
So I went into AI, and I asked AI, what should the nickname of the Big Three be? And we're going to do something with AJ tonight that's a teaser for the game that
okay.
You should make sure you watch. AI took it in, gave me a bunch of different nicknames. I chose three, and I have the poll up right now on my Instagram.
Okay.
All right, we're going to be talking about this poll during the course of the game tonight, so everybody go to my Instagram, at The Real Sean Farnham. Don't ask me why it says The Real Sean Farnham. It's something, anyways, just go there. You can follow me, too, if you want to. Take the follow. But I do have the poll up, and it says, here's the three, and I want to get your guys' pick out of these three. All right. The Rock Stars.
Ooh.
Okay.
Okay.
R-O-C.
R-O-C.
Yep.
Okay.
The Blueprint.
Ooh. Okay.
Okay.
Or the Wasatch 3.
The Wasatch 3.
I like others more than those three. I know AI.
I'm going off of AI, and I'm asking you, Jerem. There's
the Blueprint's
teacher.
Fun.
Jerem, I'm the coach. I'm the teacher. I gave you three.
Who made you a professor? The Blueprint is probably the best one.
You like the Blueprint?
Right? Yeah. What do you like?
I think it's a great play off of the student section. I think the Rock Stars is fantastic.
I mean, because you do think about it, right? Like, the Rock is... Like, it's to me, like, it's always been one of my favorite parts of coming here is The Rock. And they get there early, they're loud, and the connectivity between the student section and the team, I kind of lean towards Rock Stars. I'm going to go to Blueprint here in a second, though. All right? But I like the Rock Stars based on the connectivity of the student body with their team and how that shows up every single time there's a home game. So I like that. Like, they're playing for the student section. I think that connectivity is fun. The Blueprint, though, to me... might be more like KY, right?
Because he's like, this is happening. This will continue to happen. Yeah. Yegor.
See,
AJ.
You're smart. Let's go. You're so smart. Like, that's why I love coming
I'm not
on
UCLA
show.
Smart, but I'm smart.
You could have been.
You seen his transcript?
I don't think so.
I kid.
Jeremy, I agree with you.
They're going to fight in the break,
Jeremy's
by
very
the way.
Sharp. Jeremy's very sharp.
I'm self-aware.
No, but I encourage everybody that's watching the show, go to my Instagram. Vote in the poll at the very least and let me know because we are going to be talking
Love
about
that.
During the game tonight.
Kay. If you vote and comment, Sean will DM you back. That's a guarantee.
That is not the case. I will not. I've had too many DMs in the last couple of days. That's for another time.
Back of the plane, DMs, it's all happening. Sean, we'll see you tonight. Thanks, man. Okay, BYU basketball with Kevin Young is back tomorrow night with special guest Kennard Davis with Greg Rubel in Studio C to recap the TCU game. Look ahead to the Texas Tech game tomorrow night, 8:30 Eastern on the BYU TV app.
Still on the way, the latest injury update from 49ers linebacker Fred Warner. Could he play this week or the next week? Plus,
there is no next
national
week
recognition what? For BYU Hoops and their big three.
Lies! Blasphemy! Go Niners! Bang, bang! 49er gang!
Seahawks!
Hawks.
BYU fans everywhere.
Well, today's headline, sponsored by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
It's a ball night for number 11 BYU men's basketball, taking on TCU, BYU 12.5-point favorite. Of note on BYU's availability report, center Abdullah Ahmed, probable. Xavion Staten, questionable. Pregame 10 Eastern on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
BYU's Richie Saunders named the Oscar Robertson National Player of the Week after averaging 27.5 points and 11 rebounds per game and wins against Arizona State and Utah. Saunders, the second BYU player to win a National Player of the Week award this season, along with A.J. DeBonta, two in the same season.
That's wild, man. Big 12 basketball scoreboard. How about Kansas upsetting number 2 Iowa State, 84-63. Number 7 Houston beat West Virginia, 77-48. Baylor picked up its first Big 12 win at Oklahoma State. Tonight's game, number 1 Arizona hosts Arizona State in the Territorial Cup. Number 15 Texas Tech hosts Utah. Colorado travels to play Cincinnati. UCF heads to Kansas State.
Former Cougar and current 49er All-Pro linebacker, All-Pro Fred Warner, his practice window has opened as of yesterday. He eyes a potential return for the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. So his team needs to beat Jerem Seahawks to get there. He's not expected to play against Seattle in the divisional round.
Good one. And Elo Van Brittingham of BYU Softball was ranked number 49 on D1 Softball's top 100 preseason player rankings. Brittingham and BYU open their season at the NFCA Leadoff Classic in Clearwater, Florida on Thursday, February 5th.
Question. Is BYU basketball's Big Three of A.J. DeBonta, Richie Saunders, and Rob Wright III BYU's best Big Three ever? More responses to our question of the day on BYU Sports Nation after this.
Yeah!
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
The triple combination.
The triple combination.
BYU's Big Three accounts for 67.61% of the points this season.
A.J. DeBonta! Rob Wright III! Another one, Richie Saunders.
BYU Sports Nation, and we are live in Studio B. Our question of the day is the Big Three of A.J. DeBonta, Richie Saunders, and Rob Wright III, BYU's best Big Three ever in any sport. Jeremy, what do we have from at Bill Herlin?
Bill? How about Connor Mance, Rory Linkletter, Clayton Young, who all finished in the top 7 of last year's Boston Marathon? Connor and now Rory also hold their country's national record in the half marathon.
Yeah. I said Casey Klinger. Forget that. Rory Linkletter was with Connor Mance and Clayton Young.
How dare you.
Three Olympians.
Casey Klinger. No, Casey those, Klinger all those amazing. Guys. Awesome, man.
I love this submission from at Danny Davis.
Oh, yeah.
34870. He says, Wally Joyner, Corey Snyder, Rick Aguilera were pretty good.
Yep.
1982.
In 84, they got as high as number 1 in baseball. Pretty awesome.
People forget how unbelievably good BYU baseball was in the late 70s and early 80s.
I miss it.
Danny Ainge, also a great baseball player.
Never played at Brigham.
But played in the major leagues. Our elite voice of the day presented by PAX Healthcare Careers, built for victory. In from, who's this, Hans Olsen?
I think it's Hans.
Hans?
Yeah.
At 975 Hans. Says, very simple and easy answer without a single doubt. Yes! So this is the best BYU Big Three ever.
It is funny that some of you thought this was like outside of BYU. Rafa Nadal and
there's a clear BYU modifier in there.
What? Do you know the name of the program? If you miss any interviews, trending topics, or any other BYU Sports Nation content that makes sense because it's about BYU sports, make sure you subscribe to the BYU Sin YouTube channel to watch anytime on demand. Oh, I had Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig. And somebody else from the 27 Yankees.
Mickey Mantle? Still on the way.
Not in the 27 Yankees.
Rise and shout out to BYU's second player to win National Player of the Week this season. Told you earlier, if you missed it, we're going to talk about it again on BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by PAX, healthcare careers built for victory.
Today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
Give it to Richie Saunders, the National Player of the Week, the Oscar Robertson National Player of the Week, second player to win that award this year. AJ got one. And by the way, Richie did a fireside in Alpine on Sunday.
Awesome.
Packed house with he and Sierra talking about
Look
the benefits
that.
Of going on a mission. That's cool.
Our thanks to today's guest, Sean Farnham. But we didn't have time for Dennis Pitta, right?
No, never.
Conversation continues 24/7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows on demand, BYUSN.com. For Jerem, I am Spencer. Shout out to Alex Barcelo. Go Cougs!
We'll see you tonight. Pre-game.